We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview. The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning and happy Friday. It is April 12th, and this is our post-Share-a-thon program. And so for the last 3 days, you have heard me alongside Tim Wildman in this hour, and we so appreciate everyone across the country who has given for Share-a-thon and continues to bless this ministry so that we can continue to do the work of the Lord. And I truly know that this is a ministry and a calling from the Lord to be here at AFA and on AFR, especially with the topics we're going to talk about this morning. But if you had considered giving and you just didn't quite get that in before the end of yesterday, you can still give online anytime at AFR.net. And you can also see our theme verse, which of course was 1 Corinthians 1:9, and we had talked about that and God's faithfulness, and that verse says, God is faithful by whom you are called into fellowship with his Son, Jesus Christ our Lord. And God is so faithful. And so, you know, when I look at the state of America, specifically this, you know, shining city on the hill, as it's been described in the Beacon of Liberty, and the best view and practice of government with a constitution that is an incredible document that is designed for human flourishing and the most liberty and individual freedom possible while still restraining evil, and that constant tension, but with the Declaration's mandate that government is obligated to limit itself so that it doesn't infringe upon our rights that are pre-political, given by God our Creator. I mean, all of these topics that we could spend so much more time on, and I spent an entire book on, actually, and we look at where we were founded and some of the ways that we have continued toward a more perfect union, but then other ways that we are declining as a society. Nobody can argue that. We clearly are declining when we look at the state of our union, and not just the political speech that Joe Biden gave a few weeks ago. When you look at the state of what's happening in America, and specifically on the topic of abortion. And this was in the headlines this week, and I kind of couldn't wait till we got to today to talk about it because we had Share-a-thon, so important. But I wanted to talk about this because really this boils down to the fact that the Republicans and the pro-life establishment just were not prepared, were not ready for the overturning of Roe versus Wade, even though we've had since 1973 to get prepared to return this battle rightly to the states. We just weren't prepared for it. And a lot of the chatter on social media, and as I've talked about this on my Salem Side TV show, if you watch that, you can go to the Salem News Channel and see that. I've covered this in the last few days. And of course, the pushback is, well, of course, the issue should be returned to the states. And Jenna, why do you have a problem with President Trump saying that, you know, hey, this isn't a federal question and all of that stuff? Well, because this is the problem that I have. And I want you to very clearly understand this, that it was not the position ever of true pro-lifers, those of us who believe that every human being is made in the image of God and has inherent dignity and worth from conception all the way until natural death. It has never been the pro-life position that the goal to overturn Roe versus Wade and send the abortion regulation battle back to the states was the end. That was the goal. And now that the issue is back at the states, we can sit back and say we've accomplished what we have always wanted. And so if blue states want to allow partial birth abortion up until the moment of birth and state-funded abortion on demand, then we're okay with that as pro-lifers because, hey, federalism. And, hey, as long as the red states in Florida get to keep our heartbeat bill, then it's totally fine what New York, Colorado, and California are doing because, hey, that's our system of government and we the people can direct the will of the people. That's not what pro-life means. Pro-life means in limited government and understanding that our rights are pre-political, that the government is obligated to stay within its legitimate authority, which by necessity and by design in America's constitutional republic is to uphold moral virtue and enact moral law, do justice, restrain evil. Those are moral propositions. Justice is not a matter of we the people's consent, and if we decide that something is just or unjust, like the social justice warriors would like us to believe, that this is a matter of majority consent, that we get to divine our own reality and replace God our creator with our own consciousness and our own truth. But this is exactly what people like Donald Trump are suggesting. And this isn't just a criticism of Trump because, you know, I'm a Trump basher or anything like that. I mean, I hope that he gets elected personally because Joe Biden is so much worse. But I wish that Donald Trump was a true pro-life advocate. I wish that a lot of people who call themselves Republicans, call themselves conservatives, were true pro-life advocates, that they understood the worldview that underpins this. And I think that here at AFR, all of our listeners are smart enough. I know that you are smart enough and you have the Christian worldview enough to get this and understand why Trump's statement that he put out on Monday was the wrong thing. He's taking a step back and he's saying the federal government should have no business in abortion. It's returned to the states. Therefore, we're done. That's the implicit message. And then when he was asked about it by a reporter, I think this was on Tuesday of last week. It was Tuesday or Wednesday of last week. This was his response. This is cut four.
Did Arizona go too far?
Yeah, they did, and that'll be straightened out. And as you know, it's all about states' rights. That'll be straightened out. And I'm sure that the governor and everybody else are going to bring it back into reason, and that will be taken care of, I think, very quickly.
What do you think about Florida?
Florida's probably maybe going to change also. See, it's all what the will of the people. This is what I've been saying. It's a perfect system. So for 52 years, people have wanted to end Roe v. Wade to get it back to the states. We did that. It was an incredible thing, an incredible achievement. We did that. And now the states have it, and the states are putting out what they want. It's the will of the people. So Florida's probably going to change. Arizona's going to definitely change. Everybody wants that to happen. And you're getting the will of the people. It's been pretty amazing when you think.
The will of the people. It's a perfect system. Arizona is going to come back into reason by that 1864 law that has now outlawed any form of abortion other than the life of the mother and is actually criminalizing it for abortion providers with potentially 2 to 5 year sentences. Oh, let's come back into reason. No. That's not the pro-life position. It is not the position that just because a majority will of the people determined or will determine that abortions can happen for certain exceptions or only in the first trimester of the pregnancy, that is the will of the people and it's a perfect system because we the people always do what is morally sound. And if we just have a majority, the majority will should prevail. The founders didn't believe that. This is why we have a constitutional republic with elements of democracy that are embedded into our constitutional republic, but we don't have just straight democracy. We have elements of that, but we don't just have mob rule. Well, why? Because the people can get it wrong. I mean, we saw this back in 2018 when Ireland gave the world an example of why democracy is not a priori or it's not assumed to be better or a more moral system of government than any other. And so generally, we're taught that in America, that we the people are infallible and inherently legitimate as a 51% majority. And Ireland did this whole, in Proposition 8, if you recall this, back in 2018, they legalized abortion by a sheer majority will vote. And that showed why democracy is not necessarily in all circumstances better or more moral than other systems of government. We the people are fallible. We can do moral wrong. That is a truth that the Bible clearly shows, that we are fallen. But Americans somehow buy this idea and this myth that we the people are infallible and inherently legitimate as a 51% majority, that we are the sovereign and we get to dictate the measurable difference between right and wrong, good and evil. That's actually a leftist social contract theory, humanistic, secular humanist position. That's not a biblical worldview. God is the sovereign in our system of government. We the people are the very same people that our declaration recognizes are under God our creator and who are vested by him with certain unalienable rights that are pre-political, and that governments are necessary among men to restrain evil and to provide the best opportunity for human flourishing, and as an institution that God ordained, but they still have to be legitimate by enacting moral law that follows from our divine lawgiver. And so just because a majority will of people determined in Ireland that abortion on demand should be legal doesn't change the objective truth that the recreational killing of an unborn child is inherently wrong and immoral. And so just because we have now returned the question in America of abortion regulation to the states, this doesn't mean, as Donald Trump is suggesting, that this is the most perfect system and the will of the people, and, you know, whatever blue states versus red states want to do, hey, that's up to them, and we've done our job. We've overturned Roe, we've given it back to the states, and now there is no moral question. Pro-lifers have what they want. Everybody agrees on it. That is false. We can't legitimize evil through a legal mechanism any more than we can legislate ourselves out of the Earth's elliptical orbit. Humans just simply do not have that control. And so we have to understand that our system of government only works, any form of government only works, when we recognize and adhere to biblical truth and our divine lawgiver. And so being pro-life means that, yes, we wanted Roe versus Wade to be overturned because there's no constitutionally protected right to abortion that's found in some vague, you know, privacy that covers abortion as Roe and its progeny stood for. No, there's nothing whatsoever in the Constitution that allows for Congress to perpetuate abortion regulation. Now, there's a good argument that the 14th Amendment, saying that no state shall deprive a person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, and also the Equal Protection Clause, that Congress would have the ability to restrict states from allowing abortions because of protections of life for the 14th Amendment. But there's no power that Congress can tell states like Florida, for example, you can't have a heartbeat bill, you have to allow abortion further than what your state regulates. We have to be precise when we are arguing for pro-life, and we can't give this up just because, you know, well, hey, Republicans might lose in the fall. Well, okay, then we're not doing a really good job of being pro-life advocates. And we aren't, because we should have had trigger legislation like Arizona in as many states as possible for the eventuality of potentially Roe versus Wade being overturned. We didn't do that. We kind of failed and centered everything in Washington. And Republicans, I think, have run on this proposition for a really long time that Roe versus Wade was settled law, and we just had this great argument that because federalism, it should be returned to the states. But now that we're actually here, we don't know what to do with it. And so Trump's position is, well, let's just punt that down to the states, and yay federalism. Now that the states get to do what they want to do, then everything is equal, everything is fine. That's not what our Constitution says. That's not what our Declaration says, and that's certainly not what God says. Pro-life means that no state has the legitimate authority to allow abortion in any circumstances or to foreclose a human life prematurely and intentionally from the moment of conception all the way till natural death. And I don't care what a blue state says, you can't do that. Why aren't we standing firm on that proposition? And why are we thinking that if we stand firm on what pro-life really means, then, oh, Republicans aren't going to win in 2024? Well, then maybe we need to do a better job. So we'll be right back to rant more about this and the biblical worldview here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. When Charlotte found out she was pregnant, she was 7 weeks along. In the back of her mind, she thought abortion was the best solution. But after hearing her baby's heartbeat and seeing her beautiful baby on an ultrasound, she chose life. Her heart is filled with gratitude for all of you who made this possible. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and the death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles the baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. And we are talking about the truth of the pro-life position, which is not just a policy position or a party position or, you know, something that we can pick and choose, like whether, you know, we think that it's better to have, you know, 9 justices versus 7. That's not necessarily an inherently moral question. That's just a question of policy. This ultimately is a question of moral virtue and truth. And so we're talking about this concession from a lot of Republicans that we just need to walk away from the abortion debate, because now that Roe versus Wade has been overturned through Dobbs, that pro-lifers are just satisfied with the fact that states can now legislate surrounding abortion regulation. And that is not at all what pro-lifers stand for. And that is a secular humanist philosophy. And so we as Christians need to be very clear about the distinction between biblical truth and false ideology and false worldviews. And secular humanism is this philosophy that contends humans have the capacity to determine morality with no greater plumb line than simply declaratory judgments, some enforcement power or legislation, and the current point in history society finds itself in. This is basically what Donald Trump is advocating for, that just right now, in our current point in society, because Congress is very unlikely to have any sort of consensus on abortion regulation, even if they believed that 14th Amendment argument, that we just need to back away from it and we need to focus on other issues. I mean, people even said, and this was such a terrible choice of phrasing, people actually said to me on social media this week, this isn't the hill to die on. I thought, well, a lot of babies are dying, literally, on this hill. And if we don't support the most basic and fundamental right, then what are we doing? And why is society worth saving? And why do we think that God will bless and continue to bless America, because he has greatly blessed America, if we as Christians are willing to concede this issue? Now, I'm not suggesting in any way that we just cede our vote in November and we don't participate in the election, and this whole idea of a closed universe situation of, you know, we have to choose the best of the available candidates. And I think that there's a very clear choice on which one is better and which one is communist. That's very clear. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't expect more from the GOP nominee, from the so-called conservative candidate, and especially from ourselves and the people within the broader tent of conservatism that are seeding all of these moral arguments. And being on the quote unquote wrong side of history is what the left says when they suggest that the wrong side of history or the right side of history can change with the whim of the dominant majority ethic, rather than being consistent, predictable, universal, and immutable truth. That's when right and wrong changes depending on sheer majority will. And right and wrong then are no longer measurably different. It just depends on what we determine as winning. Are we really winning anything if we have conceded over the last 60 years the definition of marriage, abortion, and all of the social issues and the trans agenda, the LGBTQ agenda to the left? What are we actually winning? What are we fighting for right now? The unpopular truth that these, I would term them secular Republicans and secular conservatives, quote unquote conservative, because they believe in a few things of like the principle of capitalism over communism. Okay, great. But you don't have to necessarily be a Christian to just see that the truth of God is the best for human flourishing. And the unpopular truth is that our American constitutional republic was not founded on secular humanist ethics or the principle or the premise that we the people can self-determine our own reality. Our founders provided a worldview statement in our unanimous declaration that reflects an objective universal standard, recognizing as a nation that truth exists. It is self-evident. It's not subjective to man's whim. And one self-evident truth that men are created by God and God, not the government, endows us with our fundamental unalienable rights. And one of those rights specifically and textually that's acknowledged in our highest law of the land, our rule of law, is the right to life. So we the people are not the ultimate sovereign. 9 justices on the Supreme Court are not the sovereign. The Arizona Supreme Court is not the sovereign. Our founders recognize that the only true, just, and legitimate sovereign is our Creator and His infallible moral truth. Our government was not built on the idea that the sheer will of the people is infallible. Democracy, as evidenced by all of these ridiculous abortion propositions in the various states, including my former home state of Colorado, that allows abortion until the moment of birth, that can be just as evil and fallible as any other form of government. If we had a tyrant and we had a totalitarian government, which is what the left prefers, that could be just as evil as straight democracy. And a constitutional republic is not necessarily inherently moral and virtuous if the laws that we are enacting through our elected representatives are unjust or immoral or are pretending that we get to determine our own reality. I mean, if Congress tomorrow passed a law that suggested that or allowed that men can become women and women can become men, it's not like we can sit back and say, hey, that's our system, big, beautiful, perfect system, and so everything's good and okay. No, that is still morally wrong. And we've seen evidence that we know that inherently. We know that. But when confronted with these really well-spoken speeches, like what Donald Trump is suggesting and what a lot of these Republicans are suggesting, even Speaker Mike Johnson, who I know is very pro-life. I mean, I know him personally. He's very pro-life, very conservative, very Christian. He's even saying, you know, hey, Roe was returned to the states, and I think that's what Trump was getting at. Okay, but the states are still limited in their power. They still can't determine reality according to whatever the majority consensus of the California General Assembly or the sheer will of the crazy Californians determine. California is no different in the truth of reality as God has presented us to than anywhere else in the world across all of human history. So this is the question. Why should the evil that can be foisted on a society by one bad monarch change into good simply because that same evil is foisted upon a society by the will of we the people through a majority? It doesn't change. Evil is evil, whether it's carried out by one person or a million people or the majority of the legislature or by an executive order. A rape is still unquestionably immoral if it's committed by one person or a gang of evildoers. It just does not matter. Defining the measurable difference between good and evil requires an objective standard that is not subject to the whim of the people's consent. This is the biggest misnomer of our constitutional republic, that the people through our consent, give limited powers to government so the people, we the people, get to determine the reality that our legislature should create for us. That's not what we the people means. We the people are the very same people that the Declaration acknowledges are human beings made in the image of God, and truth being self-evident, God endows us with our rights. Our founders began with the premise for government that its only legitimate role is to protect and preserve our rights that are God-given. A government's role isn't to redefine reality, infringe upon our rights, or replace God's measurable standard of legitimacy and moral virtue with anything else, including consensus. And yet this is where the Republican Party is going. This is why I have called it moral gerrymandering, that we are starting to try to redraw the bright lines of moral truth to carve out all of these different social issues that we think are losers as conservatives and some of us as Republicans. I'm unaffiliated at this point because I can't get along with this party that actually believes this, right? That their whole platform is to basically say, hey, we're less bad than the Democrats, so you better defend us on anything we do. No, that's not my calling. That's not your calling in front of our Lord and Savior. That's not what he calls us to be in terms of the Great Commission and teaching the things that Christ has commanded us. We're not called to go along with a party platform when it's wrong. We are called to speak truth. Speak truth in love, but speak truth, and sometimes it hurts. And the truth of the gospel of Christ will condemn evildoers. And so when people think that it's harsh and, oh, hey, you're not being loving, maybe it's just because it is convicting them of their sin. It is showing them where they are evildoers. And this is why in Romans 13, when it says that, you know, the just and righteous man doesn't fear the government and the civil government, because he doesn't fear that the government is going to come down upon him because he knows he's doing good. So when people tell you, oh, you're just being, you know, this harsh, you know, overly righteous, judgy Christian. Well, this isn't my truth that I'm just imposing. I'm not being more righteous intrinsically. I'm simply pointing you to Christ. He is the standard. And so we have to get away from this myth of American civil government and our Constitution being more morally sound simply because it is a constitutional republic and that we the people are somehow inherently virtuous. No, the Bible says, for all have sinned, the heart of man is evil. When Trump says, follow your heart, that's a Hallmark card. That's not the truth of the Bible. The truth of the Bible says that man's heart is desperately wicked. Don't follow our hearts. Don't follow we the people as if, you know, we have some collective good that we always pursue. No political choice of government is inherently better if that government is not founded upon objective moral truth and bound to that mandate. If our founders had bound us to a mandate of Christian virtue and instilled a king, a monarch of the country that would always follow the will of Christ, that frankly would be better than the society that we have now, right? And you may say, well, wait a minute, no, you know, constitutional republic, will of the people. Well, in the new heaven and the new earth, we will have a king. We will have King Jesus. That is the best form of government possible, is a perfect and righteous king. We will have true justice reigning supreme one day. But right now, we just have shadows of that. We have an imperfect system, and the founders did the best that we have because men who are fallible have to run government. And that's why they didn't make it a direct democracy. And that's also why they didn't make it one man or woman that has the legislative, executive, and judiciary, the law, the ability to enforce, and the ability to decide and judge vested in one person, because the heart is desperately wicked. So our founders created this American experiment to preserve freedom and liberty for all because they understood genuine freedom and liberty can't be protected for all absent a moral foundation. But we are getting away from that moral foundation and replacing that with a secular humanist playing field that suggests that whatever the will of the people is always great. It's this perfect system. That is completely false. And that is antithetical to what our founders understood. And this is why our first Supreme Court justice, Chief Justice John Jay, once said in a letter, and you all are familiar with this quote, almost all nations have peace or war at the will and pleasure of the rulers whom they do not elect, who are not always wise or virtuous. Providence has given to our people the choice of their rulers, and it is the duty, as well as the privilege and interest, of our Christian nation to select and prefer Christians for their rulers. Why? I mean, for the Christian, we quote that all the time, but why? Why are we better off with Christians at the helm of the nation? Because a Christian, by definition, and we're assuming that a Christian means a believer in Christ and a follower of Christ, not just, you know, Christian because we're a cultural Christian, like we talked about last week. A Christian, by definition, understands and recognizes that good and evil, right and wrong, are not defined by humans. We can't redefine our reality, but by an objective standard. And so this is also why conservatism is built on a Christian foundation, if it is, and true, the truth of conservatism and rightly defined conservatism is the best choice for a political philosophy, regardless of the precise government offices or separation of powers and all of those things, which in turn, you know, have better or worse choices in our founders' embedded elements of democracy in our constitutional republic. But it's the best political philosophy because we understand that neither big government or the petty tyrants or man in his collective whim on his own little island can self-determine morality. We should be continuing to conserve truth, conserve objective principles of universal right and wrong, and understand that this is not just about, I mean, even just taking this away from abortion regulation being returned to the states, this isn't even about federalism. It's not about one issue. It's not about even the type of system that we have. This is all about recognizing that you cannot have a legitimate government absent an objective moral foundation. If we are going in America in 2024 to replace our moral system with a secular humanist foundation, then I've got news for you. Our constitutional republic will become a mechanism for doing evil, and federalism is not going to save us. And no Republican platform saying, you know, hey, states can determine whatever they want, that's not going to save us. A constitutional republic is not a priori the best system of government when we lose our moral foundation and we replace divine law with atheistic secular humanism. It's just not going to save us. We have to return as a country to the truth of God. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Speaking truth with love. This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back. And we have been ranting this morning, there's just no other word for it, about the scope of conservatives generally in America. Not everybody, I mean, but those I think who just really don't understand what we the people in context means, how a lot of people who call themselves conservatives are actually embracing this secular humanist philosophy, suggesting that something is moral as long as we the people get to determine where government goes. And as long as, you know, federalism and the principles of returning issues that are not up to Congress back to the states, then whatever the states do, hey, you know, that's the greatest system of government ever. And we are upending and uprooting our U.S. Constitution and our system of government from its moral, truthful, objective foundations and replacing it with a social contract theory and a secular humanist philosophy. And this is where I really believe that Republicans, conservatives, and pro-lifers in general were really not prepared for the overturning of Roe versus Wade. And so I want to invite in Father Frank Pavone, who is the founder of Priests for Life and is a just ardent, prolific pro-life advocate. And Father Pavone, you know, you've seen, as I have over the last week, you know, this debate over abortion regulation becoming an issue nationwide again. And and how so many conservatives, it just grieves me so much that they're saying, you know, hey, pro-lifers, why aren't you happy? I mean, this is going back to the states, so let the states decide. And if California wants to do whatever they're going to do, well, hey, that's federalism, too bad. We need to move on. That's not the position of pro-life. So where are we at with this, and how do we better explain this message that, no, pro-life does not mean, you know, hey, California can do whatever it wants to do as long as the state is doing it rather than the federal government imposing it?
Right. Well, thanks, Jenna. I think it's helpful in this discussion to begin by making the clear distinction between the moral discussion and then the political calculus. I think if we just separate, I mean, obviously there's connections there, there's relationships between those two spheres, but to separate them, it will help people, I think, to grasp the concepts that we are trying to convey. So as pro-life people, you know, it would be just as absurd to say that the unborn are to be protected in one state and not protected in another, as it would to say that your life or mine or any of our listeners' lives would be protected in one state but not in another. I mean, can you imagine the uprising, the sheer absurdity? I mean, what would people react? How would people react to that? Life is something that is an absolute right. It is a right given by our Creator. This is how our government was established. We have natural rights from God. Governments are instituted to secure these rights, period, not to edit them, weaken them, trade them off, or anything. And life is in that category. I mean, a lot of other policies, you know, you can negotiate, compromise, et cetera. But this is a fundamental moral principle, and every other right depends on it. Now, so that's from the moral angle. And then secondly, you know, you mentioned about the movement wasn't prepared for the overturning of Roe. And, you know, from the very first, from when this case that became the Dobbs case first began, I was seeing the signs, and I was participating in so many meetings, saying to other leaders and to politicians, they said, listen, we're talking about, you know, this case potentially returning the issue to the states. They said, let's not use that language. Because right from the beginning, the Dobbs case wasn't about a vertical change, but a horizontal one. What do we mean? Vertically, most people are thinking, oh, well, you know, this was at the federal level, now it's at the state level. Well, let's take a few steps back. Abortion battle was always in the state. It was always in the state. That's how the Dobbs case came about. A state law was passed. It wasn't that things weren't being battled out in the states. They were. And the Supreme Court allowed, you know, a significant number of regulations and limitations to take place on the state level. What the difference was under Roe is that the court kept striking down pro-life laws because they were saying there was a constitutional right to abortion. So the change with Dobbs is not vertical. It's horizontal. It's moving from the courts to the legislatures. It's the court saying, we're not going to get in the way anymore if the people and their lawmakers decide to protect the unborn. We're not going to strike that down because there's no reason to strike that down. That's what the change was. So sure, we can have let me pause there to let you interject, because I mean, those are some of the initial thoughts that we have to put into this equation. And then, of course, there's a lot more we can unpack.
Yeah, and I think that's so wise to frame it that way and to say, you know, yeah, this now came out of the court system and is back out of the judicial branch and is going back horizontally to the legislature where it was always properly vested. And that is still the battleground. And that is a really great visual of how you are describing that. And it's absolutely correct. And so, and yet we have this, we have a lot of conservatives that are saying, okay, now that we've moved it back, our work is basically done. And whatever the legislature says, that's okay. I mean, and that's absolutely what it means to be pro-life. We still have a lot of work to do. And it's my contention, I don't think that a lot of pro-lifers and certainly Republicans in various legislatures were actually prepared for this.
Right. You know, under Roe, a lot of the legislators and even some leaders of different groups would say, oh, well, you know, the court decided the issue, so it's off our shoulders, you know, kind of a way of skirting their responsibility. So now they can't put it on the courts anymore, so they put it on the states. It's like, wait a second, in neither scenario should we shirk our own responsibility for this. It's in our hands now. It's more our responsibility than before, so to speak. I mean, if the court said, another way to look at this, I mean, I think the Dobbs decision was in many ways an act of repentance. If we look at this in a spiritual way, the court was saying we shouldn't be so arrogant as nine justices on the Supreme Court to think we can work this issue out for the American people. And that's why we're saying it's not up to us. We've put it in the hands of the American people because the lawmaking process allows for much more, has much more bandwidth than the court process. I mean, there's all kinds of hearings, legislative hearings, witnesses, arguments, counterarguments, lobbying, amendments, et cetera. And the people are more directly involved in that. And this is one of the reasons why, of course, on the pro-abortion side, they don't want this either, because it's like, oh, if we go through the legislative process, people are really going to be able to examine what an abortion is. How do you escape that? Well, either by declaring a constitutional right or jumping to the ballot initiative process, which, again, doesn't give people much chance to examine what the main meaning of this proposal is. And they just vote on it in one day, and all of a sudden you have an abortion policy, and you can't change it very easily because it's in the Constitution. Bottom line is we have responsibility here to protect the unborn. It's a moral absolute. It's a non-negotiable. And, Jenna, I would make one other distinction. You know, people argue about, you know, limitations or it's different here, it's different there. There's a big difference between drawing a line when you're trying to take protection away and drawing a line when you're trying to restore protection. Okay, the bottom line is we can't draw any lines when it comes to the protection of human life. We're not God. Every human life has to be protected. But suppose those lives are protected. Like, for example, in Arkansas, the pro-abortion people are having a dispute as to where they should draw the line with a proposed ballot initiative. Should we just put it at 12 weeks in the hope of getting more support? Should we go all the way for an unlimited right to abortion? What should we do? Well, you can't draw any line. You can't take protection away from human life. But what if it's a situation where the babies, like in most places, do not have protection? And you say, well, we have to protect as many of them as we can. Well, how many can we protect? Well, what's the consensus among the people and their lawmakers? If they're willing to protect them, stay starting at 15 weeks, if they're willing to protect them starting at 12 weeks, if they're willing to do that, we have to do that because those babies deserve protection. But the other ones, we're not saying the other ones don't. They already don't have protection, and we don't have the votes in order to give it back to them. So the big distinction between saying, hey, here's what I can do right now. I can't go beyond it, but I can't do the impossible. That's not a moral compromise. That's just recognizing the limits of my power right now versus, hey, they're protected. I'm going to start taking that protection away. Then you're playing God. I hope that's a clear distinction.
Yeah. And it really is. And I think that's a very important one because a lot of abortion abolitionists, which you and I would fall into that category as well, where we think that, you know, abortion should be banned in all circumstances. I mean, there aren't exceptions, and there shouldn't be. Even, you know, when you have the life of the mother, well, the child is still a patient in that room too, and at least try to save them both. There should never be a moral question of which one do we save. But when we are talking about the practical and what we can do legislatively, if it's a matter of saving babies starting at 15 weeks versus none, then yes, the moral correct answer is save as many as you can. I mean, if you go back and, you know, you always hate to use some of the Holocaust analogies because, you know, right. the left just always, you know, says, don't do that. But who cares what the left thinks because they're the baby murderers anyway. But, you know, during the Holocaust, when there were people that were helping to save Jews, they couldn't save everybody, but they saved as many as they could. I mean, and this is where Schindler's List, you know, that very profound and just tragic ending where he's sitting there and so beautifully played by Liam Neeson saying, you know, he takes off his brooch and going, I could have saved one more life. Obviously he couldn't save everyone, but he saved as many as he possibly could. And that needs to be our practical attitude based on a moral foundation. And yet I think because the politics of this is focused so much on the practical, we are not articulating the moral message as well as we should because we have been told it's a losing issue.
Oh, yes. Well, that's a big tool of the left. They want to discourage us. They think they have a winning issue on abortion. You know why, Jenna, why they're saying that? They see their base slipping away everywhere else. They don't have any policy successes to run on. They can't name a single policy success under the Biden administration. The Democrats are all corrupt. And so what has happened now is then they see the Latino vote slipping away, the black vote slipping away, the youth vote slipping away. They have nothing left except to hope that maybe the abortion issue can rally their troops. And it's really sad when the only issue they think they can win on is killing our children. Furthermore show themselves to be cowards because when they bring forth the abortion issue, the last thing they want to talk about is abortion. I always say to them, describe what you defend. Describe the procedure. Show us the procedure. Why aren't you putting out, photographs and videos of abortion? They know they can't do that. They'll never do that because people would be horrified. So, but I do think that it's important for people who have, the moral conviction on this, first of all, to realize there's a distinction between our job as pro-life advocates and pro-life leaders and the job of the politicians. I don't expect a politician to give a pro-life speech like I would give. I don't expect him or her to do that. I expect him or her to sign the right legislation, appoint the right judges, take the right executive actions, do what their job description says they should do. Shame on me if I don't articulate the moral dimensions of this and try to educate and persuade people, including the politicians. But at the same time, I don't want to judge the politicians, even if they say, we can go this far but no farther. I think some people interpret that right away as a moral compromise, whereas they're talking more in the context of legislative and political limits of consensus. Mm-hmm. That, as we were just saying, is not the same as saying, oh, those other abortions are okay. They're talking in terms of, well, what can we achieve right now?
I think that's where Speaker Johnson is. I think that's where Speaker Johnson is. I did take issue earlier in this program with how President Trump articulated it by saying, that when we're returning it to the states, this is great and that's the perfect system, and didn't make that moral versus practical distinction. But, he rarely draws very clear lines. His messaging, I think, purposefully is open to a little bit of interpretation. But it needs to be a both and, because if we are expecting our political representatives to be pro-life to the extent that is practically possible, we should also expect them to not undermine it by their messaging and discouraging the moral virtue either. So I think it's a both and I think you're right that they tend to focus on the practical. But like Carrie Lake just saying, I call on the governor to, reverse this great outcome in Arizona, that's wrong. That is morally wrong, and that's not the both and. Yeah. That's just wrong, and we have an obligation to call it out.
Right.
All right. Well, we are already out of time. There's always so much more I could speak with Father Frank Pavone about. I really appreciate your time this morning. And, the bottom line, friends, is that we have to make sure that we are consistent Christians first, then build our conservative and political and civil government philosophy based on that. We make practical compromises to achieve the best that's possible, but we never compromise morally. So that is a good distinction. You can always reach me and my team, Jenna@AFR.net. Have a great weekend. We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.